Buddy, a quick heads up. Today is going to go fast. It's the power hour, and we're only doing 1 hour today. So jump in as quick as you can. If you press one on your phone right now, you should be able to squeeze in, but that's not going to last long. So if you haven't already pressed one, do it now. That'll put you in the queue for questions. If you press it a second time, it'll take you out of the queue. So I just saw a couple actually disappear. So if you want to jump in, I would do it quick. We're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. And today is the Power Hour. I'm joined by the guys from Pittsburgh Power. We've got Bruce and Ethan and John with us. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance. We'll focus on engines, performance, fuel economy, upgrades, modifications, troubleshooting, emissions, new technologies, new ideas, and we can also take questions on general maintenance topics as well. Whatever you've got, bring it to the table. We'll talk about it. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. Let's see what's new and exciting over at Pittsburgh Power this week. Bruce, John, Ethan, welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, Kevin.
Good. Always exciting to be here. We always have tons of questions. Go ahead, Bruce.
We want to wish you a happy birthday. We understand you turned 54 years old today.
Is it my birthday today? Nobody told me.
I mean, I know you get so wrapped up in your work, it's just another day. But you're just only 14 years younger than me now.
That's right. It's a good day, but it's just another day.
But hey, a couple things. Ethan did some magic today. He was able to write a program on an 8.3 ISC. It's an 8.3 liter Cummins in a motorhome. Stock horsepower was 330. And the last time I spoke with him, we were up to about 412 horsepower.
Wow.
On what's called Armco Hill, coming out of Butler, and anyone that's listening that has stayed at the motel, that's that long, drawn-out hill that brings you up to the car dealerships coming out of Butler on Route 8. They went from 30 miles per hour, no, from 40, they took it up to 50, so they gained a full 10 mile per hour on the hill and didn't gain any heat. So that's all good news for people with the ISC. Whether it's in like an FL60 or FL70 Freightliner or a T300 Kenworth, any medium duty truck, we can now help those. Also,
I love that. And you know, in general, let me jump in there. Just in general, I love the idea of getting more horsepower and torque out of smaller engines. I've always leaned towards the smaller engines, even in Class 8. So it's exciting to see what's possible out of some of these smaller engines.
That's right. And this motorhome already had the Gale Banks kit on it, which really wasn't doing a whole lot. So, but I think Ethan is going to be searching for another try to get it to 450 horsepower, but we'll let him talk about that. And then we wanted to talk about estimates. Every time somebody calls, they want an estimate. And John's going to elaborate on estimates, because an estimate is strictly an estimate. Most of these trucks we've never seen. You don't know who else has been in there and messed things up. You have no idea how rusty bolts can be. What's going to break when you're taking it apart, such as on Caterpillars? You've got exhaust manifold bolts that break all the time, and that adds hours to the build. So it's very, very hard. And then, well, how much is it going to cost me to rebuild? And then I want to add the OPS. I want to add the fleet air filters. I want to add the mufflers and the ECM programming. And I'll tell you, it's easy now to get up to $30,000 on rebuilding an engine in the chassis.
I believe
it. One last thing that I want to say is, you know, the surge is on for people looking for older trucks to stay away from the electronic logs. In 95, and this is all Caterpillar, Cat came out with the 5EK engine, and then it was followed by the 6TS and 1LW and 5DS. I think the 5DS was the C16 DCM, that's 5DS, and the 7CZ was the 16 liter with a 70 pin. And then the 70 pins really started in 99 with the 2WS engine, which led into the 6NZ. Everybody wants the 6NZ, but the 6NZ equipped trucks are not exempt from the electronic logs. So if you can find a truck with a 5EK, 1LW, 6TS, they are all great Caterpillar engines. But the very first thing you need to do is to change that torsional damper on the front of that crankshaft. That's the very first thing. So that takes you from 95 through 99, or up to 99.
I want to talk about the big picture on that, because this is a topic we've covered and I put a lot of thought into it. My gut reaction is I hate more government regulation, more government intervention. I've never been a fan of hours of service completely. As far as I'm concerned, get rid of them. Let people manage their own time and their own sleep. And if they can't, then you fine them heavily and get them out of the industry. But the hours of service have all kinds of problems, and the last 10 years have been a nightmare. And when people complain about ELDs, we're really complaining about hours of service, because the ELD is just a way to enforce the rules that are already there. So we're really complaining about the rules that are already there. So just so people don't say I'm pro-ELD, pro-government, I wanted to get that disclaimer out there. If it was up to me, not only would we not have ELDs, we wouldn't even have hours of service. But we have them both. That's the reality, and we need to deal with it. And I got thinking about this. Would I go back to a 98 truck just to avoid the ELD? Now, I would have done it before to avoid the emissions, but we're past that now. So I'm getting excited about new trucks. I would not go back to a 98 just for ELDs. And something I think people should think about: the vast majority of the industry will not be in those older trucks. I don't know what the percentage is, but my guess is somewhere near 90% of the industry will be on ELDs. So now think about enforcement out on the road. They're not going to bother with the trucks that have ELDs. It's totally controlled. The odds of finding a logbook violation on one of those trucks is slim to none. So guess where they're going to focus all of their enforcement ELD and logbook issues? On the 5 or 10% of the guys running the older trucks. Who the hell wants that kind of attention?
That's an angle I hadn't thought of.
Well, I can tell you, Kevin, with the ELDs, I could never become an owner-operator because I sleep best in a two-part day. My body likes to sleep 4 hours. It likes to get up and go back to work for a couple and then take another three. I could never sit somewhere for 10 hours. So.
You know, they did make one good change. They're bringing back the split sleeper time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's at least a step in the right direction. Because, again, we're really not arguing ELDs. We're arguing hours of service. All we're saying is without ELDs, it's easier for us to cheat. But it's still the rule that is the problem, not necessarily the ELD. But it's just going to be very easy for enforcement to identify pre-1999 trucks and say, there's a logbook violation ready to happen. And I just see them targeting those old trucks, and you just don't want that kind of attention.
Okay. Well, that was very well said. Can we let John talk now about estimates?
Absolutely.
John? All right. Real quick, Merriam-Webster defines an estimate as A, to judge tentatively or approximately the value, worth, or significance of; B, to determine roughly the size, extent, or nature of; and C, to produce a statement of approximate cost of, which is where we are. So we do our best here to stick to those. I mean, I'll try to be as accurate as possible on an estimate, but some of these older trucks with parts that are hard to get and they're difficult to work on and have rusty nuts and bolts, I do everything I can to stay within and live and die by my estimate. But there are parts that we can't see that we're going to need. There's no way to know in the future what this job is really going to cost. And the bigger the job, the greater chances of it overrunning that. So we're dealing with a situation right now that's difficult. And just want to get it out there to everybody. We do the best we can with our estimate, but we're not always going to be able to nail it. And you're going to have to understand, especially with the older equipment, these are things you're going to have to come to expect when you run a 1998 or 99 truck. So back to your thoughts on the ALD and wanting to go backwards, you know, that far back on a truck. So, yeah. You know, we do the best we can do, and it's not always going to be possible to do it. And keep in mind, it is an estimate. There's nothing that says we have to hit that number. That's a best effort device to give you an idea of what you're going to spend.
Well said. I agree. It's good to get that message out. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come back. And since we've only got an hour today, we're going to jump right into the calls and questions because we got a bunch of them. So when we come back from the break, we're going to get right to your questions. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The guys from Pittsburgh Power are here as well. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get right to your calls and questions. We're off to South Dakota. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are we doing this week?
Good. What can we help you with?
Well, last week I called in. I was the guy with the Caterpillar engine getting combustion gases in the coolant.
Okay.
I guess I kind of have a game plan for my motor there, because of course I wasn't quite ready for that to happen. I just kind of want to know what the boys thought about that, and I have another truck I actually picked up that I want to see kind of what our thoughts are on. Basically, my plan is I found a used motor for my truck. It's got 650,000 miles that I can pick up for about $10,000, and I know I can handle the motor swap. And then, that, you know, that would buy me more time with my truck, not to mention I get an extra ECM, I get the extra twin turbos, manifolds, I get, a gamut of extra parts with, you know, that whole purchase. I think that might be a kind of a brilliant thing for me. Just the part value alone would be worth having extra sitting around for a guy that can do a lot of his own work. And then probably having my other one, you know, rebuilt out of the frame. I don't know what's your guys' take on doing something like that.
What your engine that is getting the compression into the cooling system, what year is that?
05 CAT C15 BXS.
Okay. All right, so it's a BXS. And the one you bought, is it a B or an M or an N?
Oh, I'm sticking with the B.
Sticking with the B. Okay, well. John, what's your thoughts on you? You're the Acer guy.
I think that sounds like a better deal up front than it really is going to be. It's going to be a tremendous amount of work converting it over. And then you still have, even if it is your labor, it still has sizable value. Then you're going to have a whole lot of time and effort into an engine that still has 650,000 miles on it. And if you don't know how it was stored, you don't know how it was ran, you don't know how it was maintained in the past, You know, if you've got current oil analysis on it, maybe you'd want to put forth that effort. If you're handy enough to change the engine, you're probably handy enough to do an in-frame yourself, which is what I'd recommend. I would just get a good look at the block. You're probably going to find either a cracked head or a cracked liner. And, you know, for the cost of a rebuild kit and, you know, a week or so of your labor, maybe quicker, you know, you're going to have a rebuild engine then. You'll have fresh everything inside anyway. That's not a bad deal. It might be worth buying that thing and just setting it aside and rebuilding it to put in the truck at some point in the future. But I wouldn't put forth that effort for a used engine, personally.
Okay.
I'd sooner rebuild the one that was in there.
All right. And then, you know, when we were on the phone last week, I was in the process. I'm a small carrier, so I have another guy that's leased on to me. There's just the two of us with our two trucks. And I actually sent him out and kind of in Kevin's neck of the woods there. I found a truck for sale, found a 98 Freightliner with C12. I want to say, if I remember right, it's a 2KS serial number, C12, 10-speed in it, and 307 rears. It's got $1.2 million on it with 200,000 on an in-frame. I kind of wonder what your guys' thoughts are on that, and because we're picking it up today, I guess. And I'm kind of thinking I'd like to bring it out, have you guys check it over, probably do a torsional dampener and balancer on the front of the motor just right out of the gate, and probably do a dyno run and see if we can kind of tune it up. As long as I don't have to throw any other hard parts into it, kind of a ballpark of what something like that would cost me to get that motor running tip-top.
The C12 is a great engine. It's going to need some power. The power box works great. The power box, manifold, and turbo on power level 3, the engine produces 550 horsepower. Carl Kellner out of Buffalo, New York, runs a C12 now. And with his, he put everything on it that we have. He did not rebuild the engine. And on power level 5, on the dyno, that C12 went to 729 horsepower. He wanted to take it up to power level 7, and I was kind of concerned about that. So we just settled right in there at 729. So the C12 does a great job, and with 200,000 on an in-frame, think about the manifold, turbo, power box, or ECM programming, and the damper and the balancer. And you'll have a great engine, and you'll really like it.
Well, I figure, if nothing else, at least it's a good spare truck for us to have when we have some downtime. Then a guy isn't relying on, well, we got to try to, you know, fix things quick or fix things cheap. And if we fix things quick or cheap, it isn't fixed right. So this way a guy can keep the truck rolling and not have to worry about anything.
And the C12, if you're going to do some local running, and especially in flat country, it does a phenomenal job.
Well, we kind of run all over, and we're out in we do a lot in the Northwest, and we do a lot all the way, you know, we pretty much do all the states, except nothing north of New York, nothing in California.
You know,
we have
really
zero complaints and zero failures on a C12.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, Bruce. I see. That's just one of those bulletproof engines that we just don't see any problems on. And I think part of our thought process on that engine is just a misplaced perception. We're so used to 15-liter cats that we think of the C12 as a small engine, but it's the same as a Series 60. And like you said, you're getting 700 horsepower out of that thing. I don't look at that as a small engine or a light duty engine at all. I mean, I think head to head, it's a stronger engine than the Series 60. We get excellent fuel economy out of them, and they just are trouble free. I'm a big fan of that engine.
Well, that's what I was looking to hear.
I've always said that if I decided to buy a motorhome, I want one with a C12 cat.
If it made sense cost-wise, I would swap out my C13 for a C12 in a heartbeat in my motorhome.
Right. So now you're thinking right buying that C12. That's a good buy right there.
Yep, I agree. We're going to move on. We got a lot of questions. We're going to get to El Paso. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon there, Kevin. Pittsburgh Power, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good.
I got a quick question for you there, Kevin. I'm looking, I'm kind of new into the admission motors. I'm upgrading out of an A-strip motor, 2005, and I'm trying to go aerodynamic for the drivers, and I'm looking at getting possibly like a 2014 or a 2015 T680 maybe, or maybe a Peterbilt 579, but I don't know nothing about these trucks and what's going to be the best the best truck to get for trying to get the fuel economy for what we're doing. We're doing, you know, heavy loads all the time, and I'm not really sure these rear ends.
I'm gonna let John and those guys weigh in on which engine your choices really are going to be, the MX or the ISX, and I'll let them, because they're the ones with their hands in those things every day. But one thing I want to clarify, and this is just kind of a pet peeve of mine in the industry keeps to referring to emission engines after 08. And you just said it, and I just want to be clear about this. You said my first emission engine, and then you said you had an A-cert. The A-cert is clearly an emission engine. But the industry keeps saying they've been trying to make it sound like the emission engines are the 07 model, which really wasn't sold till 08. Just a little pet peeve of mine. These 04 through 08 engines are clearly emission engines. John, you guys jump in on the engine choice there.
I'd go with the 680 with the ISX in it, personally. I'd get the, you know, whatever the biggest in 2014, what was it, 550 or?
You can get a 600.
614? Yeah. Okay, 600 horse. ISX is probably the direction I'd go if that's what you're sold on. And personally, you'd have to consider a Cascadia of the same vintage with the DE15 in it if you're really looking for fuel mileage. I think out of the box, without modification, you're probably going to do a little better with the DD15 fuel mileage-wise. The ISXs we've tuned are getting up there. They don't get quite the fuel mileage the DD15s do, but we've had some success with those. It seems that with these new engines, the tuning isn't automatic fuel mileage anymore. It's got a lot to do with the driver. They're pretty efficient as they are.
Okay.
If it was a low horsepower spec. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's what I was going to ask about, because what I was looking at doing is that, you know, I'm trying to get away with trying to, you know, it's just I've had so many problems with the drivers over, you know, last couple of years with the other trucks, you know, having flashy trucks and nice chrome and, you know, they just don't appreciate it. That's why I'm going to an aerodynamic truck where you don't have to really worry about it no more. Just get the best fuel economy. But should I stay away from a fleet truck, say like from a Warner truck where they're like 450 or 425 horsepower? And, you know, like.
We will come right back after this break and we will answer that question. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're going to get right back to the calls and questions. We were talking with Daniel in El Paso. Guys, if you want to tackle that, fleet truck or no fleet truck?
I'm going to say something. Here's my problems with fleet trucks. They have the bare necessities. They have 10 speeds. They don't have a boost gauge. They don't have a pyrometer. They're single stacks. Actually, everything today would be that because of the, well, DPF, it doesn't really matter, I guess. But they're so bare. I prefer an owner-operator spec truck. And if you want to attract a good driver, you should buy a nice owner-operator-equipped truck. And especially something with boost gauges in, or they put the scan gauge in. But people, for some reason, they buy fleet trucks and they don't want to put the necessary gauges in to drive the engine properly. So that's why I'm against the fleet truck.
Okay. The reason I was wanting to go to a fleet truck is because, you know, like I said before, I had real nice trucks, real flashy trucks, and, you know, it's just I couldn't get people to drive them right, and, you know, they were able to take care of them. So that's why I was going a different route this time with these newer trucks. But
You know, going to the aerodynamics is clearly smart. And, you know, the classics tend to have a lot of chrome and a lot of aluminum. It needs polishing and upkeep. And the aerodynamic trucks, you don't deal with that nearly as much. You wash them, they look nice. But I think I'm with Bruce here, you know, we'd much rather have a 13 speed than a 10 in today's world. The gauges are really nice. The gauge package you could upgrade on your own if you're willing to make that investment. You might be able to find a convertible out there. So it was a 9 speed. You can convert it to a 13. I haven't been paying attention to how common those are in that year. So there are some other possibilities, but I agree with what Bruce is saying. When you buy that limited truck, the 10 speed, the no gauges, you're missing out on some things, and it doesn't cost that much more. So really what we're looking at is kind of somewhere in between what you've been doing. You've been going with classics and lots of chrome, and now we're looking at aerodynamics, but we'd like to see some more upgraded stuff, and you just may not find that on the fleet trucks. Let's go to Arkansas. Michael, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. What can we help you with today?
I just got an old setup I want you to get a quick look at.
Oh, boy. This looks like it belongs to the Green Bay Packers. There's so much green and yellow on this page. That's not a good sign. What year is this? It's a Series 60. What year?
I think it's a 1998 model.
Okay. So, guys, I'll read the report and I'll let you guys take over. We've got a long history of increasing soot. So if we go back to March of 2016, it was our first really elevated sample at about 2.8. Then it leveled off a little bit last November at 2.1. February was 3.1. And this April was 4.6 on the soot. We have oxidation. We're starting to see high wear metals. But I think it's all going to come back to the soot. So why don't you guys talk about what we could start looking for to figure out why this engine's so sooty?
What is the oil change intervals?
I've been going, I've been changing oil about every 100,000 miles.
That's okay, with an
iron part. What's the iron particles, Kevin?
This, again, we had a history. If we go back, we were elevated last March back at 108, which was high for the amount of miles that was on that oil. Then we dropped down to 65. That was a pretty good sample, but that one only had 30,000 on it. Then we climbed up to 77 with about 60,000 miles. Now we're at 113 with close to 80,000 miles. So the iron, all of the wear metals have been elevated, but that's common when we see soot. I think the soot is the underlying cause of the problem. And I don't care if it has 500,000 miles on the oil. We shouldn't see this kind of soot.
Hey, okay, Kevin, what about the silicon? What's the silicon level?
It was slightly elevated. Again, if we go back to that really bad sample, which was last March, it was 13. We like to see it stay under 10. Then he was at 8, 9, and 11. So we're getting a little more dirt than normal in there. Not excessive, though.
Well, if that was my truck, I'd be changing that oil and I'd be doing, I would change the oil now, and I'd probably do another one at 8 or 10,000 until I got it cleaned up. I would continue to do a 10,000 mile oil change, and then I would start to extend it up to 12 and 15,000. But I'd be putting a set of injectors in it too. John, did you have something?
Yes, Kevin, at the higher mileage, I don't have, obviously I don't have it in front of me, the report. How low is the base number going and how high is the oxidation?
You know, the base number is staying pretty solid. This is Rotella T6 synthetic, so we don't start with a tremendous amount of base. Again, if we go back to that March sample, which is where the problem started, the base had dropped down to 2.86. That's getting a little low.
Okay.
But since then...
Yeah, I don't like that. Yeah.
No, but since then we've been at 5.3, 5.3, and 4.8, and the oxidation on this last sample is up to 28. That's excessive.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that to me. That's the you're losing film strength there. I don't care what anybody says, and I don't think they flag that early enough. On in my opinion, I think that needs to be flagged at a lower number. I would do a blow-by test on this. I'd have put a manometer on it, get it to a shop with a dyno, or bring it here and let us dyno it and do a manometer test on it, because it sounds to me like we've got some cylinder wear and ring wear.
So, Michael, really we need to track down the cause of the soot. Injectors highly likely. Overhead might need to be set. We should be looking at intake and exhaust restriction. This engine just needs a little TLC, and I completely agree. It could be a lot of blow-by. We're not seeing a lot of oil consumption, but something's going on there. And until you figure it out, I would decrease those drain intervals down to Bruce's schedule. Sounds good to me till we get this figured out. And I would ditch the synthetic for now because you're going to be doing such short changes and just go back to a straight Rotella. Let's go to North Dakota. Oh, John, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, those quick changes are good for cleaning the engine. Do a couple of those and then give it another look.
Yeah, and you might as well dump the synthetic until we figure this out. No sense wasting money on that. The standard Rotella would be great. Let's go to North Dakota. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I got a question. 2012 ISX, the fan runs a lot and goes like in phases of running a lot, but do you like monkey with something like air conditioning or like the intake sensor, and it'll quit for days or weeks at a time? It seems like there's like no rhyme or reason for it. Is that told? I've been told it's ECM, but I've been trying to track some wires and different things, but I was just looking for some ideas. That's
Have Ethan? You ever replaced the intake manifold air temp? If they start to read, we'll say funny, and jump around, it can cause the fan to go on, and it's an easy part that could go bad, but fail in a way that is still valid.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I did when it was running for like a week, and I cleaned that, just starting to clean stuff and like stay ahead of the emissions, and it didn't run for like 3 weeks after I cleaned it. Well, then it started running again. It kind of like starts slow and builds. Well, then I cleaned it, didn't do nothing. I put a new one in, it didn't do nothing. You know, so it's like I didn't track it. You know, I just, yeah.
The best thing to do then is to get it to a place where we can or someone can look in and see what value is what's triggering the fan. Because you need to know what's telling it to turn on.
I believe it was some intake air, you know, sensors is what was doing it sometimes anyway.
There are so many things that can turn that fan on. We've seen a pressure switch on the AC turn it on.
Yeah.
There's a normally closed and a normally open switch on the AC. There are numbers of different things that could bring that fan on.
Even the oil temp sensors.
How many inputs? 10 or 12 inputs will turn the fan on, something like that. So, yeah, it'd be worth looking around. It could be any number of inputs there.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. The music's playing. We're going to get to the break. We've got one more segment. We're going to come back and get to as many of your calls and questions as time allows. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get right back to your calls and questions. We're heading off to Michigan this time. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Say, I got a 2017 Volvo with a Volvo engine and the I-shift, and I'm wondering, is there anything that you guys can do to that? I know before you didn't have too much going with that. Is that still the case, sir?
Ethan?
What year was it again? It's 2014.
17 now. I'm going to do it. We are going to do an installation of our soot separator for that. I've actually got a test truck lined up to do one with. Aside from that, we don't have anything for that. Bruce, do we have a damper for that by any chance?
No, the damper is internal in the engine, so you have to take the engine apart to change the damper. But being
they haven't changed that design yet. Yeah.
I don't think so. We have the fast fuel system, and what about a fleet air filter?
I could do a fleet,
those were
too,
my
two
thoughts. Yeah, those are my two thoughts.
Okay, fleet air filter. What's the dampener? What is that?
No. The personal damper is internal. You don't need that for several more years. The fast fuel system to take the air out of diesel fuel, that'll give you 30 more horsepower and a smoother pulling engine. And the I bet we could
port the
ceramic coat a manifold for that, though. I bet we could do that. We'd have to buy a manifold and start playing with it. But those are the items that we have, and we're going to have the soot separator on it, so...
Okay. So
by the way, John, do you want to tell them the new name? You want to tell them the new name for the soot separator?
Sure. Yeah, we've decided to go with we're gonna call it Dorothy, as in from the Wizard of Oz and the tornado. The guys in the shop nicknamed it that while I was working on it, and it seems to have stuck. And we've actually talked to some marketing people, and everybody seems to think it's brilliant. So watch for our marketing campaign on Dorothy here for our little soot cyclone. So we've got an interesting logo and a tagline to go with it that we're still tuning on a little bit. And there'll be a page on the website introducing you to her, and we're going to go from there.
I didn't get a vote on this.
That's because
I never told you that story, did I?
That you live too far away, Kevin.
I know, but when you started talking about the tornado thing, and I like that, but the first thing that popped into my mind was Toto.
Toto. Well, you know, we could have a whole line of products along those lines. So. Be ready for some more.
Everybody likes dogs, and we could come up with a cool logo. I immediately thought Toto.
See, Kevin, if you would take an office in our facility, you could have had a voice in that.
You could have, yeah. We could be your East Coast headquarters here. Interestingly, that the shape where the separation happens, where the magic happens in that thing, is a torus. It's not a cyclone. It's not a conventional cyclone. It's not a cone type cyclone. It's an actual torus, which is the geometric name for a donut, basically, which is rooted in the same word as tornado. So it's a tornadic separator, not just a cyclonic separator. So it all works together.
Yeah, I love the angle. That's great. I just like dogs. So, all right. Well, we're going to head off to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, happy birthday, Kevin.
Thank you.
What's hey, John, mind? On Dorothy, how about getting Helen Hunt to take a picture with it? Hubba bubba, how about that?
Oh, we'll find someone to, yeah.
Yeah, there
you
can
probably imagine where all the marketing has gone on that, and some of the pictures we've already come up with. It's going to be interesting. You know, we know what truck drivers love. Talk. Yeah, you got it. So, yep.
Hey, Bruce, this one's for you. 14-liter B-Deck 4, 2004. You guys in-framed it in 2012. Right now, I got about 320,000. By October, I'll be at the five-year mark and about 375,000 miles because I do locals. I don't do near as many miles. What do I need to do with the crankshaft damper being 5 years and less than 500,000? Obviously, the engine runs smooth as silk right now. What do you suggest?
Nothing. Don't do anything. Just enjoy it. Wait until it gets a half a million or 10 years.
Okay, I thought you said 5 years. That's what I wanted to find out.
No, 10 years.
Okay, that's what I wanted. Thank you.
Vibratech that makes it say, 10 years, they can still be good. I said, well, when I cut them apart, cut them in half, and they're low miles, but they're 10 years old, they're locking up. So that 10 years was my figure. And that was from the research that we've done and cutting them in two. So,
got it. Let's head off to Alabama. Joe, welcome to the program.
How are y'all doing today?
Good.
My question is, I got a 90 model Volvo. It's got a 3406V cat motor in it. What can y'all do for mileage on those? Turbos or anything like that?
We build the nozzles 30% larger. We set up the pump. We go to a high altitude turbo and the fast fuel system, the fleet air filters, the straight through quiet performance mufflers. And we do get good fuel mileage and good power out of them.
Do you?
Good engine, the old four and a quarter B and the 4.25C. Yeah, there's still a lot of those running and they're great engines.
Yeah, this one's been setting up since 2011, and I'm fixing to put it back on the road. And I had an in-frame done, and I parked it, and it's only got about 50,000 miles on the rebuild.
Okay. Make sure you don't have algae growing in the fuel tank, so you might want to get some Killam. And what are the other things we have, guys, for algae now?
The Penray does the Penray have any?
No, Penray's for
just for asphaltine.
Yeah, Penray's for asphaltine, but the algae is what you may have in your fuel tanks, and you might want to take them off and steam clean them and wash them out, or just check if you check the fuel filter after you drive it for 100 miles and pour it through your hand or into a jar and see if there's little black specks. There's little black specks in, then you've got algae because that's the waste of the algae. Algae is an actual living organism, and that's its crap.
Hey, Joe, I just want to jump in, and I want first option to buy this truck if we get hit by an EMP. We're going to squeeze in probably one more call here. We're off to California. Al, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 2014 T680 with a IS3. I just had it a couple of months. And I get the engine derate light comes on. It's come on a few times in the past, but it goes away. But this time it's staying on it. It's been on for over an hour. It's telling it's going to derate 2 hours. I was wondering if I did a regen, would that help?
If it's regen related, yes.
Okay.
Now, some of the codes may not let you do a parked regen depending on what's going on, if it's related to that. It could be another sensor also causing that problem.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, a few times it comes on, and I read on the service manual here with the truck. It says, sometimes turn on the air conditioning power, power in the truck, accessories, shut them off, turn them on, and it'll go away. And that has happened before, just the time it's been staying on for a while already. And so in the event that it stays on, and then I have to actually take it to a shop, and they got to do the dirty deed and plug it in to replace their sensor, not cleaning out, right?
Yeah, a shop will have the ability to diagnose the problem and do a forced regen on it to see they can force the truck in the one, and then it'll tell you if it's still happy or what's wrong with the system.
All right. Okay. And so another question. When I took the area, according to the dealer, they did the TPF thing, and they took it out, put it in the oven and all that. So I've only probably put maybe 25,000 miles on the truck. Can you get plugged up that quick?
It's possible if there's an underlying problem. You have like an injector going bad and it's not, spraying the fuel properly and it's causing a larger amount of soot to go through the filter, then yes, it can plug up prematurely.
And with that, we're going to have to wrap it up. We're all out of time. We'll do it again next week. So join us then. Great questions today. Thanks to the guys at Pittsburgh Power, Bruce and John and Ethan. This has been the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Be safe. Be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good night, everyone. All right, everybody. Thanks. That's all we've got today. We will have Destination Health tomorrow, so we'll see you then.